Hey folks, welcome to another interview-only episode of the MLF Bass Fishing Podcast. This one is with Jim Tutt. It should be a good show. At some point in time, Kyle and I will get together and talk over a fantastic Champlain event and, you know, preview the finale at the St. Lawrence. I don't know that it's going to happen this week. We'll kind of see. I will say, I think you should stay tuned later on this week for some schedule-related news. I guess I, you know, may end up being wrong about that, but hopefully I'm not. But anyway, I'll go ahead. I'm going to read you an ad, and then we'll throw this over to Jim Tutt. So, anyhow, few lures have stood the test of time like the original Rattle Trap by Bill Lewis. And now, with the help of Major League Fishing Pro Mark Daniels Jr., we're launching the SB57 and MR6. Go to rattletrap.com to learn more. Anyway, there's that out of the way. Here is Jim Tutt. Alrighty, and we are joined now by Jim Tutt, Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit veteran, who is mid-drive from Texas up to New York for the final event of the season, and also sitting sixth in the Angler of the Year race. Jim, thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Yeah, Jody, thank you, man. It's a pleasure. You know, I've listened to some of you and Kyle's podcasts, so thanks for inviting me.
Well, I feel like I might have invited you or thought about it, but you kind of invited yourself, and I appreciate that. You know, I'm always ready to talk to talk to you for sure. And dude, you are just crushing life this year.
You know, yeah, you and I have been friends for a long time now, and you know that I'm not ever at a loss for words. So, yeah, and plus it's a great way to kill some time. I'm about halfway there, and it's a long drive from Texas to New York, but, you know, New York is the place where the big smallmouth go, and you know, I love catching smallmouth in that whole area up there, so I'm real excited. The trip up there is always, you know, exciting and new, and you think about things you're going to do, and the trip home, if you make some money, is good, but if you don't do good, it's a long drive back home.
I feel you on that. Those post-tournament drives, when you don't do good, are, I mean, they could be long if they're 3 hours. Like,
oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, fortunately for this year, kind of you just mentioned the fact that I've been real consistent this year, and I hadn't had any of those bad drives home yet, so this might be one of them, but so far, so good.
Well, let's talk about this year a little bit, because, like, not only are you doing fantastic, but you've also had, like, a lot of health issues this year that could have really derailed you, I feel like. So, I don't know, maybe give me a little bit of, maybe not the full detail that you gave Kyle and I that one time at Smith Lake, but, okay, like, give me a little detail on just what you've been going through this year, because the results have been fantastic, but I feel like, you know, it certainly could have been not great.
Absolutely, you know, and I can kind of talk on the health issues first, hit on those, and then kind of tell you how I think it relates to my year in fishing. So, yeah, in a nutshell, in the last year and a half, I've been diagnosed with two types of cancer, unbelievably so. Never had anything wrong with me in my whole life. The first one was CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, which I didn't even know what that was, but basically it's a bone marrow, or excuse me, a white blood cell cancer. And I've been on chemo now for about a year, real non-invasive. You know, I'm fine with everything. I feel great. Never had really had any symptoms of either one. And I just kind of took it like, okay, well, let's just go on. Hadn't changed anything, you know, as far as my fishing and working and stuff. And then the second one I was diagnosed with was, of all things, I found a cancerous tumor in my bladder. And I thought, all right, well, what's up with that? And I thought it might have been caused by the chemo, but it wasn't. Anyway, so they did surgery and went back actually last week for a follow-up, and everything's good. And you know, all this stuff happened basically this season. I mean, the bladder stuff and the cancer and all within the season. But, you know, it's all good. I mean, I'm fine with it, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. So I haven't changed anything that I've been doing. And, you know, it could have derailed me. I mean, you know, first off, it could have been a physical deal where I couldn't have fished, you know. But thankfully, I got some good doctors and everything's working good. And then mentally, I just said, hey, man, you know, there's a lot of people that have stuff like this. And kind of truthfully, I guess, maybe one of the reasons it's made me fish pretty good this year was that I want to say it took my mind off fishing because, you know, it was, you know me for a while, like I said, and fishing is my thing. I mean, I eat and breathe that like everybody else that fishes tournaments, but it kind of got my mind off it in a sense when I was not at the tournaments and made me clear-headed, I guess, is the best thing I could think of when I got to the tournament. So, you know, it's all kind of interrelated. And I've just been making the right decisions at the right time, and maybe that's because the 2 days of practice. I like that. At first, I thought I wasn't going to like it, but, you know, it's made me practice a little faster, and I haven't got spread out during practice. So just a combination of things.
Yeah. Let me run through. So your tournament finishes this year, they've been like dynamite. Your worst one is 66th, and that was literally the last one here at the Potomac. You know,
right.
You've gotten a $10,000 check in every single one of them except the Potomac. You know, you've basically been, I guess outside of Okeechobee, you wouldn't have been in the top 10 in AOI after that one, but you've pretty much been in the top 10 in AOI, like, pretty much the whole time. Like, you've been hanging around.
The cool thing about that was, starting at Okeechobee, I don't remember what it was, 28th or 38th or something like that, but every tournament since then, including the Potomac, I've moved up in the standings every time. So, and even at the Potomac, I had a chance to do really good. I was in, I think, 18th or 19th the first day, but the second day, I kind of had two or three little areas got muddy and the wind was blowing, and I tried to fish them and just, you know, I just didn't get any bigger bites, but that's kind of my own fault. But yeah, it's been an amazing deal. I just been, I haven't been locked in. I think every tournament I've caught them one way one day and another day the next day. So, you know, just fishing good and very relaxed. I actually called Larry Nixon last year, and I mean, I had a terrible year. Didn't think I was going to requalify, and kind of checking on him and his shoulder. And I said, so, hey, man, I got a question for you. Just what, you know, any ideas to be more consistent? And he gave me some advice, and then I really appreciate that. But then I started thinking later, I thought, I'm not Larry Nixon. Just do what you like to do and, you know, go fish how you like to fish. And that's kind of what I've done, and it's worked out so far.
All right. Now, what was his advice? Because I know we're not all Larry Nixon, but also I don't ever want to pass up Larry Nixon advice. You know what I mean?
Well, I, you know, I say I just ignored it. That's not necessarily the case. I took his advice, but I didn't fish like Larry would do. In other words, he gave me, and first off, I appreciate him talking to me. That's cool. He's my hero. He's the man.
Yeah,
so,
he is.
So I thought that was really neat. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. But, you know, he said stick to basic stuff, you know, like I think he said Ned rigs or Cincos or jigs. And he said, you know, don't get too spread out all over the lake. You know, he suggested fishing like major creeks, the mouths of major creeks, and just, you know, not a lot of stuff, but just basic stuff. And I took that to heart in the sense that, you know, fish what you like to fish. You know, fish by a Cinco type deal. You know, they're about a worm and a jig. And so I kind of backed off some of the moving baits a little bit and you know, stuck with some of those top baits, and it's paid off.
No doubt. Well, I tell you what, with Nixon, you can pretty much always see him. Maybe he's throwing like a small swim bait, but basically you can always count on him to be dragging something around not very far from takeoff. And,
yeah.
I mean, man, it like just, and he's always catching fish too. You know what I mean? Like, so
that's right.
I can see that working.
Well, one of the other things I've done too, and I think in the past, especially the last 3 or 4 years, is it's kind of tough for me when there's a $10,000 carrot hanging out in front of your nose. You know what I mean? In other words, you think, oh, if I could make, you know, if I could just catch a limit both days or 12 pounds or whatever, I could make a check. And so I had the tendency to run around a little bit, try to catch fish. But this year I haven't done that. I mean, I've gone to each tournament just either a couple of different patterns or 3 or 4 different areas where I'd gotten a few bites in practice. And I realized, hey, there's more than, you know, 2 bites here, 3 bites here. There's a lot of fish here. And so I didn't really wait them out, so to speak, but I kind of gave my areas and my patterns a little more time, if you will, and it's paid off. A good example was at Eufaula, which that was the lake that I've done the best on this year. And I was more nervous about that lake than any lake because I don't really like that lake fishing. And I tied on a crankbait and fish rocks, and that was, you know, pretty much my entire tournament. And I just kept running that pattern, and, you know, every now and then I catch two or three and a couple good ones. So, you know, that's kind of an example of what I've been doing in all the tournaments.
Cool. Yeah, and I mean, Eufaula, you know, you made day three. You were cruising. Oh, go ahead.
No, I just gonna say I think I finished 18th, and man, I was just worried about catching a fish there. But it was my best tournament, so you know, don't underestimate yourself as a fisherman. I mean, if you've been doing it as long as I have, and you're just this level, at some point you know how to catch fish, and so I guess I know more than I think I know.
I mean, I can see that you have. I mean, you've been doing this long enough, and I'm not going to call you just super old, but, you know, you've probably forgotten more about bass fishing than, like, most people ever knew. You know what I mean? So, you've got it in there.
I have been fortunate to be doing it a long time, Jody, and I mean, I still feel like I was started, you know, 2 years ago. It's hard to believe that I've been doing it this long, you know, because I started way back with the Redmans, and you know, if you really go back and look at my track record originally in the first Redman years and the old Everstarts, man, I was lighting them up all the time. And I kind of got away from how I used to fish. And so I try to get back in that same style or technique, if you will. And, you know, it doesn't pay off every time, but it's doing pretty good.
No doubt. Tell me a little bit more about practice this year, because it got reduced from 3 days to 2 days, and I think a lot of that was to make the schedule work better with the Bass Pro Tour. But, like, on the one hand, that's tough for a rookie, especially, like, to say you got to go learn Okeechobee and you've never been there in 2 days, or you've got to go, you know, any place that you've never been to before for 2 days is tough.
Yeah.
But you've been to basically all of these places. You kind of had, you know, as a veteran, you had a little bit of advantage that you kind of probably knew where you either wanted to go or at least where you didn't want to go. Like,
well, and you're exactly right. I mean, I had a lot of history with pretty much all the lakes we fished, except Eufaula. Again, that was probably the one I fished the least. So I had, even with that lake, though, I had an idea of what I wanted to do and, you know, at least some areas that are, you know, typically historically good areas. Now, the flip side of that is we're going up here to St. Lawrence, and I've been to Thousand Islands a bunch, but it's been down in Clayton where I fish, you know, the lake or, you know, close to Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be new territory for me. And, yeah, that 2 days of practice might turn around and bite me now. It might be the opposite of what I like. But I am leaving, I guess, 4 days early to go up there, and I'm going to go fish on the lake, which is off limits for our tournament. And probably going to fish below the lock, which is also off limits for the tournament. So I'm trying to replicate tournament waters, you know, as closely as possible. And since I do have some experience on the St. Lawrence River, even though it's in a different area, you know, I kind of know what I'm going to look for anyway. So, yeah, I mean, but let's face it, man, a lot of those rookies, though, Jody, I mean, yeah, they're rookies on tour, but, man, those kids can fish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I talked to one. I've got to be pretty good friends with him and his dad, that kid from Louisiana, Justin O'Brien. I'm drawing a blank on his last name now.
Cooper.
But I met him at one of the Toyotas this year at Rayburn, and he was quizzing me pretty good about all these lakes. He'd never been to any of them. But, I mean, you can look at how he's doing this year, and he's lit him up, you know?
I know. He's had, two top tens at Smith and the Potomac, right?
Yeah. So, a lot of these rookies, as far as fishermen, they're fine. Most of them have been, you know, doing college stuff, and they've been all over, you know, at least regionally fishing. And so, excluding the fact that they got to go to a new lake, I think they're right in par with everybody else. Plus, one thing that has changed the fishing across the board and I think you'll agree with this, is the internet. Now, I mean, you can learn all you want to learn about Okeechobee without ever going there before you get there by looking at internet stuff, you know, Google Earth and tournament results and everything, especially with the high school, college, you know, and the other circuits going on, that you can eliminate a massive amount of time, and then throw that in with the, you know, the new electronics and the new mappings data that we got. So it's a little bit different than it was even, you know, I'd say even 5 years ago.
Yeah, no doubt. The one thing that's been, I think, a huge boon to folks trying to do really hardcore research on how to win it, how to do well in a tournament somewhere they haven't been to, is just like live in general. Because, you know, if you want to watch guys, let's say you want to watch, you know, people fish Champlain in July, well, or August or whatever. Right. Well, there's like, you know, probably 40 hours of literally live fishing you can watch of just from this year, you know, not even last year. Or the year before.
Absolutely.
Like, from whether it's the Elite Series, the Pro Circuit, you know, the Bass Pro Tour, like whatever you want, you can dive in and you can watch the guys who were catching them dissect it. And, you know, it's not that hard to watch live with a map next to you and think about, all right, I think this is this area. I think this is this area. And then,
right,
you know, go and look at stuff and be like, all right, I understand what this is. You know, it's not necessarily, it takes time. It's work, you know, and it's maybe cutting corners compared to how Larry Nixon would find a really great hump back in the 70s or something like that. But
right,
boy, it's a
right,
really good way to get up to speed.
Well, yes, I agree with that totally. And some of the older guys, and I guess I would consider myself in that category as far as time, you know, with tournaments and even age, I guess now, even though I don't feel like it, but they got a problem with that. But here's the deal. It's just like any other sport or any other job. You're going to use every resource that you have available to do the best job that you can. And the people that gripe about that, oh, well, they got the internet. Well, they got the internet too. Everybody's got the same options to utilize if they want, if they choose to.
Well, not
you know,
Tom Mansour. He's still got a flip phone. But
well, excluding my buddy Tom, yeah.
Yeah. And I love Tom, but
but you know, he has that option if he wants to.
Yep.
I think he could afford to go buy him a new phone if he really felt like he needed to. But, you know, I'm of the opinion that, yeah, if it's out there, use it if you want to. You don't have to use it, but, you know, don't go be downing people just because they're trying to use every thing at their advantage or at their disposal, you know. So
yeah, no doubt.
And let's face it, too. I mean, a lot of the young kids, my gosh, I mean, my nephew comes to mind who I've talked to you about. He fishes with me all the time. You know, those kids have been fishing tournaments. They were 8, 9, 10, high school, junior high, where there wasn't that, you know, availability in the past.
Yeah, yeah,
several
no doubt.
Years ago, not recently.
Yeah, like the high school fishing and the college fishing has really, I feel like it's changed a lot, because it used to be that if you were going to kind of come up young in fishing, you probably fished a lot of local events. You probably fished them, you know, with one or two people, right? Whereas high school
right,
fishing
right,
now, you fish with, and college, you fish with a variety of people, and you are going to do some traveling. And, like, that's a really great way to get you ahead of the game, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, because you know as well as I do that when, before MLF FOW had it where you had to fish all six tournaments or all the whole circuit, where you had guys that would jackpot, you know, let's just say Murray, for example.
Yeah, or like St. Clair or something. People did that a lot
St.
back
Clair,
in the opens.
Yeah, yes. A lot of guys would do good on their home lake for maybe one day or even 2 days, but very seldom did the local, quote-unquote, favorite jackpot guy win. And if he did win, like Mansour winning at La Crosse last year, well, he's already a tour guy anyway. So there's a difference between being a hammer on your local lake and going to some places, you know, far off that are totally different lakes than you fish, and being consistent. So, you know, now that with the high school and college, you know, those kids are traveling, like you said. And I mean, just in Texas where I live, those kids could fish, you know, shallow grass, deep rocks, drop-offs, bushes, you know, clear water, dirty water. There's all kind of different techniques and styles that they learn just from fishing those tournaments.
Yeah, no doubt. For you, we were talking about sort of innovations and, like, you know, the new stuff in the tournament game. I probably want to talk about LiveScope a little eventually, but outside of LiveScope, because we know that that's the innovation. Outside of LiveScope, what have you added to your fishing in recent years? Like, is there a bait that you've picked up? Is there a technique? Is there just, like, hey, I started, you know, drinking coconut water or something like that? Like, is there anything new that you're doing that you feel like has helped you?
Well, that's
or maybe anything you got rid of and was like, you know what, I stopped throwing crankbaits.
No, I've worn the same hat every day of competition, so I'm not going to change that. Although I'm not superstitious, but I guess I am. But, you know, one technique that I've used a lot this year, and I've done it in the past, but it has become a staple. Every time I rig up rods, I've got one on, is I've been throwing the Zoom Speedworm a lot. And, in fact, I caught all my fish on it at the Potomac. And so, you know, originally that was a Florida thing, or I thought it was a Florida thing, Okeechobee specifically. But I started taking that to other places, and that's the biggest change that I've made to my arsenal. I kind of got away from my shaky head, which, you know me from the past. I've won a lot of money on the little green pumpkin trick worm, you know, with an 1/8 ounce shaky head, but kind of got away from that, but I kind of start getting back to it because it catches the fish, and, you know, I just, sometimes you need a fish, you know, and that's one of my, that is my go-to bait to catch some fish, so. But the speedworm, not the mag speedworm, but just the little
small
worm with a 3/16 weight, has been my newest addition, and it's really put some fish in the boat for me.
All right. I like it.
Innovation-wise, I think one of the key things that I think, excluding the live scope and stuff like that, is in my case anyway, and it's been out a while, but fluorocarbon line has changed a lot of stuff. And I use Gamma, which is super strong line. So, I mean, I throw a lot of 8- and 10-pound line, and even some 6 now. And, I think that's helped me put more fish in the boat. The quality of the line as a whole in the industry is better. And, you know, you can get more icing out of your baits and stuff with lighter line. It just catches more fish and you don't lose as many. So I think that's kind of changed up too, even though a lot of people don't really, you know, they don't consider that a fact, but I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if like 8- and 6-pound test is like, you know, going strong down in Texas, but I tell you what, I have 8- and 6-pound test on like every day when I fish up north, and you're right, like I don't really think about like, oh man, I'm gonna lose fish on this. You know, there's a few times where, you know, if you do something stupid with it, you know you can, but there's a lot of situations where, you know, if you're smart about it, you're gonna get them in the boat, and that's a good point.
Well, something I did, and this is kind of to that point of, generally, the St. Clair tournament, if you fish for smallmouth, or excuse me, the St. Lawrence tournament, if you fish for smallmouth, is going to be a little bit deeper than I would normally fish, and normally in our tournaments, and obviously, the water's going to be clear, a lot more clearer than anywhere we fish. And so, and I've caught tons of fish on drop shot this year, but not as much as in the past, and so, I spent the last 2 weeks there by my house, there's a little lake called Brandy Branch, Perky Reservoir. It's a small power plant lake, but it's really clear water. I'm talking about like 15 or 20 foot visibility, and it's got grass that's growing out, hydrilla that's growing out to about 25 foot. And the lake is a deep lake. I mean, it's 65 foot in a lot of places. So I spent several trips over in the last 2 weeks, nothing but live scope and nothing but drop shot with 6-pound line, to practice with LiveScope and to just, you know, test my equipment. Now, they're largemouth, they're smallmouth, but I mean, I've caught a ton of fish in the last four or five trips, anywhere from 10 to 35. And every day, every trip, I catch 20 to 25 pounds of all largemouth, drop shot and 6 pound line, 25 to 30 foot deep. So hopefully, you know, that practice with that style or that technique using my live scope will help me, you know, maybe just a little bit in St. Lawrence. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's a good idea.
Kind of cool. Yeah.
You've been a Garmin guy for a while. You've been a live scope guy for a while. Is there anything that you have, you know, learned about it as you have gone on that you feel like has made it better for you or more valuable? And then, like, are there any, I feel like asking for, like, oh, what settings do you run is, like, it's a little bit easy and people want to know it too much. Like, it's not a guarantee that it's going to actually help you. But, like, what are your starting points?
Well, here's my thoughts on LiveScope. And I've had it since the get-go, okay?
Yeah, you had, and, like, the old-school Panoptics. You had regular LiveScope. Yeah. Like, you've seen the spectrum.
Yep. In fact, yeah. And it's obviously a lot better now. Well, I love to fish shallow. That's my favorite deal. And so, you know, I use LiveScope a bunch, but I really didn't. I mean, I didn't go out during the day of practice to say, all right, I'm gonna stare at this LiveScope and not going to cast until I see a rock or stump or grass or fish. And so I felt like even as someone who's been with it a long time, I was missing the boat because I wasn't utilizing it as much as I could have. So that's back to that little deal when I went out, you know, there at the house. I went out with the full intention of only fishing with the live scope. I didn't turn on any other depth finders or anything. So I forced myself to learn it. And man alive, I mean, I won't say I'm an expert, but I can tell you this. I'm twice as good as I was 2 weeks ago on that thing because I forced myself to do it. And it doesn't lie. I mean, it really doesn't. And I was just amazed at the fact that I could catch fish, you know, 50, 60 foot out in front of you and watch them go down and eat the bait or catch them right on top of you. And I also found out that, you know, since there's hydrilla there where I was fishing, that you can target the hydrilla clumps or whatever and, you know, not necessarily see the fish, but see the structure you're fishing and catch fish out of it. So I'll say an eye-opener for me in the last couple of weeks, and I know that Daryl and those guys over at Garmin probably don't want to hear that. They go, why haven't you been using it? But, you know, that's just the way it has been for me. I think it's a great tool. But in some respects, though, it can be very tricky for you. You got to watch out. You can waste a lot of time fishing for fish that won't bite or that are not even bass, although you kind of tell a bass now, but sometimes you have to just fish, you know. You have to. So,
yeah, no doubt.
Which time you need to,
I mean, I can totally see there's times where you got to go old school, but also, like, man, you know, I've watched Spencer Shuffield catch a lot of fish the last couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I travel with, I camp with Troy Morrow.
Oh, yeah. Troy's big on it.
You know, he's big time on that stuff. He's got two units on his boat. He's got the perspective view and the forward view. So he's got the best of both worlds. And, man, I mean, he very seldom casts unless he sees fish. But you can look at his track record. He's pretty dang consistent on it. So it's a game changer across the board. You know, I know that if I was a crappie fisherman, you know, big time crappie fisherman, that you have to have it if you want to catch more fish or catch the same amount of fish in a shorter period of time. Let me put it to you that way.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, tell me about this year, man, because, like, you have. We kind of talked a little bit about how you've been doing well, but you're going up to the final event of the year. You probably don't need to catch a bass to make sure you qualify for the title, which, you know,
oh,
the last
time. Jody, that's the kiss of death, man.
The last time you made the title was 2016, man. Like, you're cooking.
I know. You know, if you go by the numbers and you know the formula how you get there, then yes, I don't have to catch a fish. But that's, I mean, I'm going up there to do the best I can. But in reality, here's the reality of the situation. Your goal in every tournament should be to win the tournament. Your second goal should be to make a check. And your third goal should be to catch enough fish to qualify for the title at the end of the year. So one of my goals has already been achieved, making the title, okay? So I'm so close to the top now, even though Michael Neal's kind of running away with it, mathematically it's still possible that I could win Angler of the Year.
That's a fact. That's good.
Yes, absolutely. My goal now, and I'm not going to say, you know, everybody says, well, I'm going to go swing for the fence. Well, you know, I'm going to go hit a triple and two doubles, or two doubles and a triple or whatever, and let the chips fall where they may. But it does take some pressure off of you, or off of me, because you're not thinking, God, I got to catch, you know, X amount of weight to make it, finish in so-and-so place. So I hope it'll let me fish a little freer. In other words, I try to go find some bigger fish and, you know, try to win the thing. I mean, believe me, I've fished these things for 20 years, and, man, sometimes I wonder if I'm ever going to win one, you know. But I know everything's got to go perfect to win. So I'm not saying, oh, I'll never win one. I mean, I know, as everybody else knows, that to win one of these things, you know, you gotta, everything has to go perfect.
And, yeah, I mean, you've won Toyota Series events. Like, you know what's got to line up.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not bragging when I say this, but I know how to win a tournament. I know how to close the thing because I have won three of those Toyota Everstart deals and a bunch of BFLs and regional and stuff. So I know how to win. It's just that it's a little bit more difficult to win now because there's more anglers that are better that, you know, consistently catch them. But again, everything's got to go perfect to win. You can't lose some fish. And even last year when I had a terrible year, I had fish on in three different tournaments to probably make the top 10. I know that sounds cliche, but I did. And then if I look at this year, I haven't lost any fish. I mean, case in point, at Florida, I was throwing Cinco with 12-pound line, flipping reeds with it. I mean, I was going behind people with braid, and I caught six and a halves, you know, in the mass, but I never lost one or never broke off. So it's just been a good year mechanically. And the thing that kind of makes me proudest of this year, and, you know, you don't want to be boastful or prideful because that'll bite you, but I've caught them on a variety of baits all year. So that makes me confident in my decision-making. I caught them on Senko, Speedworm, Crankbait, Rivet, Stanley Rivet, that walking bait over at Murray, the Shower Blow, Buzz Bait. So, you know, I haven't stuck with one pattern, and it just makes me feel like I'm fishing better. Kind of like Jacob Wheeler, you know, he'll say, oh, I need to throw this on this cast, and by golly, he'll pick it up and catch one. So I kind of adopted that philosophy somewhat.
One of the things that I know Thrift does is that he has, like, the reason he has every single rod on the deck is because he knows that if in the back of your mind you want to throw something, if you don't have it on the deck, you're probably not going to throw it. And, like, so have you...
Absolutely.
Are you doing that more where you're like, hey, I'm ready to do everything? Or do you limit your gut urges to a smaller level, not
no.
a Thrift level of stuff?
Well, not a Thrift level, but closer to that mentality. Case in point at Murray, I mean, I caught them, most of them in practice on Shower Blow, you know, the top water. But I saw this one stretch of grass, and I thought, man, that looks like a good deal for a buzz bait. And so I had a buzz bait already tied on. I made about three casts and caught a 4-pounder. Well, then I just put it up. I mean, I quit throwing it. And then the first day of the tournament, I caught a decent limit on the top water of the Shower Blow, and I thought, all right, I'm going to go back and check this buzz bait, and I caught 19 pounds on it. So, you know, it was a deal where that buzz bait was there in practice. It was available. I made a cast or a couple casts, caught a fish, and that clued me in for the next day. So, yes, you know, I want to be ready, and time is money, especially in these days, because like St. Lawrence, you could run long, long ways. If you want to throw two casts with a whatever, you don't want to spend, you know, 45 seconds for each eye. Now, that sounds kind of trite, but that's the facts, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. You're, is there anything in particular, do you have any good smallmouth wisdom for us? Because, like, I know you fished, you're from Texas, but you fished for smallmouth a lot. You spent a lot of time up north in the summer. I tried really hard to get you to come to Champlain. Let me tell you, you would have had a great time.
I know it. I just had too much going on to go there, but
what's your, what do you like to do for them? What do you feel like is a good, some good tips?
For smallmouth fishing up north, and golly, I have been up there a bunch, and that's crazy because it's, you know, 2,000 miles of Champlain and, you know, 1,600 St. Lawrence, but I mean, I just love those brown fish.
They're amazing.
I love the way they fight. I love the scenery. I just like catching them. I mean, I like catching bass, period. But they're special because they pull so hard, and maybe it's because my first big professional tournament was actually at Thousand Islands in like 1992, in a bass tournament. And I was kind of hooked from that point on. But, you know, I don't really have any specific tips or anything for them. I love catching them on a spinnerbait. My favorite way to catch them, I guess, is on a swimbait. Not the little Kytex, but I like to throw a Gambler Easy Swimmer, you know, in shallow water, you know, 3 to 4 foot. Seems like the big ones are up there, and they just blast that thing. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, the drop shot's kind of taking over. The Ned Rig's pretty strong, so I would say be versatile. You know, I like catching them on spy bait. My old buddy Jody loaned me one time. I did real good on them, and that's become a staple in smallmouth country for me. But, you know, if I was going to give a tip for smallmouth fishing for someone who's going to go up north that hadn't done it before, you know, don't be afraid to go shallow, and you don't have to throw light line. I mean, I throw that Easy Swimmer on, the Easy Swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
I throw that on 14-pound fluoro with a heavy action rod, like a frog rod almost.
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, remember?
Catch plenty of them.
Remember at St. Clair a few years ago, Castledine made the, I think he made the top 10, and he was throwing like, you know, 15-pound test or whatever with a 4-inch swim bait the whole time, like a big, you know, quarter ounce, like big hook head. Like he was sticking it to
him. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that deal I'm talking about, the Easy Swimmers, I don't know, it's about 4.5-5 inches long, and I'm throwing on a belly-weighted hook with about a, maybe not quite an 1/8 ounce, you know, like a 6-aught hook. So I think that, you know, that would be my one tip, because most people think of smallmouth, you know, on light line, drop shot, you know, tube or net or something like that, you know, fairly deep. But, you know, a lot of times you have to go deep, but not all the time.
I hear you. I feel like, what else are you an expert at that we should talk about, that we should get your input on? I'm thinking maybe driving.
Gosh.
What do you think about that? Like, do you drive a lot, man? What do you?
I'm an expert on driving. As crazy as this seems, the last two times I've gone to Champlain, now my buddy Mark that traveled with me, Mark Mallory, you know Mark,
yep.
He was the co-angler with.
I fished with Mark before, haven't I?
Yes. We fished together up at Lone Star Lake. That's right. We killed him too. Remember that?
Dude, we had a ball that
bunch
day.
Of fish.
It was fun.
That was so much fun. You got to come back, man. You have a standing invitation.
Well,
but,
I have a hunch I'll be in Texas next year, so I'll, you know, I'll see you there.
All right. I've become such an expert at driving that the last two times I've been in Champlain, we drove straight home, only stopping to get fuel. Now, that was probably the stupidest thing I've ever done.
That's
but
not
30 hours,
healthy,
so.
I don't know, I don't think.
I know. No. Well, back to that same deal, as far as an expert on driving, I don't even have to look at the map or GPS now to drive to the St. Lawrence River from Longview, Texas. That's
oh
crazy,
goodness.
Isn't it?
You just get on and go. You're like, I know where I'm going.
Take off and go. But no, I don't, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't consider an expert. I don't consider myself an expert on anything in fishing. I mean, other than maybe I throw a lot of different stuff, you know. I mean, I'm not an expert flipper. I'm not an expert worm guy or anything. It's just like I feel like I'm decent at most of it. And, you know, sometimes figuring them out pretty quickly, but sometimes not. But I don't know. I might be an expert on getting the most excited for catching a fish because I love to catch them.
I hear you. Let me look ahead a little bit. So,
okay.
You've got smallmouth on tap here. That's going to go great. I have all the confidence in the world. Probably you're going to win it. I hope.
I would like to win.
The next thing is that title. It's on the Mississippi. You finished 48th on the Mississippi last year. You cashed a check. It was one of two checks you cashed last year. So, like, it was a good derby for you. Are you looking forward to the Mississippi? Do you feel good about it? Have you thought about it at all? Like, what's your vibe? Because that seems like
it's kind of an old school place. I'm really glad you brought that up because, believe it or not, excluding the smallmouth, specifically Thousand Island, St. Lawrence, Champlain area, that La Crosse is my favorite place to fish. I don't know if you know that or not, but I've actually fished a bunch of tournaments up checking up there one time, and I did make a check last year, and I had big bass one day. I don't remember what it weighed, right at 5, I think. But this is going to sound like an excuse, but I had on the third day, and I was on some really, really, really big smallmouth for that place, ironically. But I had battery issues and or charging issues, and at 8:30 the third day, I had no trolling motor at all, zero.
I would explain why you caught one fish on the third day.
Yes.
Okay.
No excuse. That's just a fact. I had no trolling motor. And I was sorely disappointed because I was fishing the main river, and I had them. I mean, I had them going. And even the second day,
I mean, you caught 14 pounds. That was huge.
Yep. I mean, I could have had almost 20.
Golly.
I just couldn't keep them hooked up. They were wild. They were crazy. But so I was really looking forward to the third day. And then I don't know what happened. I ended up getting new batteries and a new charger. So it was a combination. But, yeah, I was very disappointed in there. But I'm looking really forward to that tournament. Number one, it's one of my favorite places. I like that style of fishing, you know, shallow, weedy. But you can fish current. You have the option of fishing for largemouth or smallmouth, which I think that, you know, you might can win it on either one. You get on the right little deal. And I'm real excited to be back in the title. It's been a while since I made it. And, you know, I just...
Your last title was the Forestwood Cup.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
And that was at Wheeler, I think. I don't even remember. I think. But,
that feels right.
Anyway, I think that's right. So this is going to be good for me anyway. I mean, it's a cool place. It's a beautiful place. And, you know, there's less people fishing in any championship than we've ever had. So I'm digging this new format too, man. You know, where you, even though it's a five-fish tournament, I believe we're splitting up into groups.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that there'll be like nobody on the water every day. Like, it'll be really startling. It'll be like every day is a top 10 day, you know?
Yes, yes. And if I believe this is correct, Jody, aren't we going to fish like 25 in a group for 2 days, and then the top 10 advance to the third day? Is that correct? The top 10 out of each group? I'm not exactly sure on the format.
I need to be more sure of the format, to be honest. But I'm pretty dang sure that you're correct. Like, because it's...
Well, I purposely not looked at the format and not looked at that because I did not want to think ahead, but now I can afford to. You know what I mean? I just didn't want to get caught up in too far ahead. But so if that's the case, then basically you got to beat 13, no, what is 25, 15 guys, you know, and then you got to beat 10 guys. I think that's right, if my math is correct. So that's a whole lot easier than beating 60 or 65 or 165 in a regular tournament. So, yeah, I'm excited about it. And I also think it's cool that it's going to be a five-fish, you know, best five-fish tournament too. So, because I was catching big ones last year. I don't know if they'll be there or not. You know, it'll change. The water level's different. But I'm very excited about it. And yeah, I hope it's blistering hot. I hope it's 100 degrees, man.
I don't want 100 degrees.
Man, I do. I hope everybody's just passing out except me.
I mean, man, if it's 100 degrees, like, I go up north in the summer. I'm up north in the summertime for a reason, man. I don't do the heat. So,
I hope it's
all right.
Yeah. Either way, I think it should be a fun tournament. I think there'll be some fish caught. I'm looking at it as an opportunity now with the new format, the field size, being on a place that I like. I mean, I really don't like, or let me rephrase that. I'm glad we're not going to somewhere like Lanier where you got to fish cane piles and stupid spotted bass, even though I love catching spots. You know, you're not having to call them up from 30, 40 foot of water. You call them up from 3 foot of water. So I like that better.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's going to fish, it'll fish big, really big.
Yeah, it'll, especially with that few people, you know, it'll be really,
yeah,
you'll have a tremendous amount of ground to cover if you want it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, another cool thing about La Crosse is, I'm assuming that we're going out of the Clinton River, or up there in Clinton Street on the Black River.
Yes, sir.
You know, we had to change the venues last year, so I'm assuming we're going out of that Clinton Street, is you could fish at La Crosse, you could fish from, you know, okay, boat number 3, and you could drop your trolling motor and start fishing, or you could run, you know, 60 miles. It depends. And you could catch fish anywhere in between. So it's a really broad spectrum of fishing water. So I hate places, even St. Lawrence, as good as it is, man, all I can think about is running that 80 miles down around Clayton because that's where I like to fish. But in my mind, I'm saying, you don't have to do that. But, you know, that lure is always out there. So one thing about La Crosse is that lure, to me, is not out there. You know, you don't have to lock to win. So just a little more comfortable.
I can see that. I like that. It gives you more options, you know?
Yes, more options.
You don't feel like it doesn't make it feel like you have to do something, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know as well as I do that on some lakes, you have to go a long way. I mean, to win, I'm saying. But I don't think that's one of those places. And even I don't think the St. Lawrence is one of those places, but it just seems to me that historically, as you get closer to the lake, the fish get slightly bigger the closer you get to the lake. As a whole. I'm not saying you can't win it right there at takeoff. I'm just saying as a whole, they seem to get a little bit bigger, you know, towards the lake and even on the lake, they're even bigger. But it might just be because there's more water to fish down there. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess this one will be, it'll be an interesting test. You know, I guess the ones out of Waddington are probably, that's maybe your best test because that's so centrally located. You know, you can fish about wherever you want. But like,
right.
You know, we've seen guys go east from Clayton and catch them pretty good. But this will be,
absolutely.
You know, so there's plenty of fish there, but it'll be real interesting to see how many folks decide to make that super long run. Because it's like from Messina out toward Clayton, you know, if you're going to go out toward Wolf Island or whatever, it's like 90 miles. I mean, it's a haul.
Yeah, I think it's exactly 90 miles to the off limits, or 88 or 90. It's a haul. I mean, if it was just slick water, you know, just take off, that wouldn't be any big deal. But you know as well as I do, you give me any kind of northeast wind or east wind, and it can be brutal, even on that river. And then you throw in a bunch of yachts and pleasure boats and, you know, old-timey boats and 30-mile-an-hour wake, no wake, or slow zone, everything. It could be a trip, you know?
Yeah. No doubt. Well, it'll be, I tell you what, though, either way, like, whatever happens, I won't have to make those long runs, and there's going to be plenty of smallmouth for me to look at, so it'll be all right. Like, I'll survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
No doubt.
I mean, ideally, if everything was ideal, everyone would get their wish, but my wish would be, ideally, I could find me a big old flat that's about 500 yards long, that's about, sticks out into the river, you know, 200 or 300 yards, and it'd be 4 to 8 foot deep, and I could stay there the whole time, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Ideally, you know, that's what I'd like to do, but, I got to see what, I'm not going to go up here and say, well, I'm going to throw a Ned rig, and that's how I'm going to catch him. That's not what I'm going to say, because, I mean, in my mind right now, I'm thinking, all right, I'll catch 2 on spot bait, 2 on drop shot, 1 on Ned rig, and I'm going to catch a great big one on a spinner bait. You know, not specifically saying that, but that mentality, you know, that I might have to mix it up some. And looking at the bass tournament last week, I better throw a chatterbait some too, it looks like.
I will say one thing. That chatterbait at least looks extremely fun, right? Like,
yes.
Who knows if it's going to work for our guys, but boy, that looked like a blast.
Man, and also, you know, back to watching that live thing, you learned some stuff, and he was throwing my favorite smallmouth spinner bait for St. Lawrence River, catching those fish. I'm talking about the Angler of the Year guy from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Fighter, yeah, Seth. He was throwing a chartreuse on chartreuse on chartreuse, and I thought, man, that's my favorite spinner bait to throw up there. So I was glad to see him catching some on it, you know. I thought, all right, because I have one tied on right now.
Yeah, it lets you know that you're not doing crazy things, you know. You're like, all right, other people
that's
do
right.
this too. I like this.
That's right. I will say one thing about that place up there. I made one of the longest, most brutal runs I've ever made, and this was way back in like 2000, I believe, when the Northern Eversharks first came out. We took out of Clayton, and it was howling, dude. I mean, it was howling. There was like 6-7 footers out there, and I ran all the way to Henderson Bay in 6 footers. But I was a lot younger then. But I tell you what, with that same sprinter bait we were just discussing, I blasted them, dude. I had, I don't remember, 18 or something pounds, which at that time was really good on it. And I wouldn't run there for nothing right now if it was that rough. But I did back then, so it's cool.
Yeah, that place, it can get mean. There's not too many days of tournament coverage where I've been able to feel it the next day, but I ran out to the Duck Islands once to follow Corey Johnston.
Oh,
let me tell you, I felt it the next day.
I bet you did, man. I mean, I admire the camera guys and even the marshals, because A, you're taking a beating and you're not fishing, so you have no, especially the marshals. You know, there's no reward for your hard drive, but the camera guys, you know, that's their job. But man, carrying all that equipment stuff and taking care of that, just taking a beating, and getting seasick, it's a chore. I mean,
I don't know how the live guys
do it. It can be hard.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm sitting in a boat watching, that I can do. The guys who are doing it live, holding a camera on their shoulder the whole time, having to look through a viewfinder, like, dude, on a bad day, I don't know how you survive, because I get pretty seasick, like, just fishing sometimes.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of making me seasick right now, just thinking about it.
I hear you.
But I did learn a tip. Here's a tip for some smallmouth fishermen. This has really nothing to do with fishing, but it has everything to do with fishing. I've heard from Troy that if you get seasick up there, all you have to do is get in the water, and it'll go away. I've never tried that. Have you heard that?
I have heard that. I've never tried it. I think that the downside to that is that sometimes the water's not very warm. And,
no, yeah, that's what I was fixing to say.
You'd want to have plenty of towels and, like, definitely another, like, you might feel a lot better, but you also might get out and then freeze the rest of the day.
That's true. I tell you what, though, the times I've been seasick, I think I'd rather freeze to death than die from seasickness. It's awful.
Oh, dude, it is so much. Even, like, I guess the best thing you can do if you're seasick is start catching them really good. But even then, yeah, it's brutal.
It's bad. I start taking some medicine they call Bonine. It's kind of like Dramamine.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, because I tried everything. I tried the patch, that gel stuff, Dramamine, you know, all that stuff. But none of that really worked. But that Bonine stuff works pretty good for me. I mean, it kind of dries you out just a little bit, but not bad. And it'll definitely help you, help me from getting seasick anyway. As bad, I should say.
All right, I like it. I always like we've gotten a lot of tips in this, but that's a good one. And who knows, maybe I'll need it here. Hopefully I won't need it at the St. Lawrence, but you never know, I guess.
Hope not. You never can tell. I don't think it could be bad in the river, but
yeah, I don't,
you know,
I
the
agree
lake
with you.
Rough, but,
we're not going to the lake, so it's all good.
That's true. We're not going to the lake. Yeah, I'm going to go up there. And like I said earlier, I'm going to go up there and fish for a couple of days on the lake. I talked to Daniel Fennell just to make sure that was, you know, all legit. And
yep.
He said, oh, yeah, no problem, because that's, you know, that's not where we're fishing. So hopefully I go catch a couple of great old big ones.
I bet you will. I bet you'll catch a couple 6-pounders for sure. Maybe even a 7.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
Have you ever caught a 7-pound smallmouth?
Would you believe that I actually caught an 8.00 one time at Kentucky Lake?
I mean, I would, Jim, because you wouldn't lie to me, but, you know, golly.
I wouldn't lie to you. Here's the story. And I hadn't caught hardly any smallmouth at the time. So I saw some guy in practice. I don't remember who it was. He said, throw a Carolina rig with a fluke on it around boulders. This one, there was lots of big smallmouth in there.
Yep.
So I rig up Carolina rig, go out there and practice, see a big old boulder, catch a fish, it jumps. I thought, that's the biggest smallmouth I've ever seen. And then my next thought was, well, that's too big for a smallmouth. That's a drum. He jumps again. I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's a big smallmouth. But it can't be because it's too big. And so even when I landed it, I'm thinking, this, I can't even believe it. So I didn't even have any scales. I put it in the live well, and I saw two guys brim fishing. Or, you know, so I go over to those guys, and I was nervous, man. I said, y'all got a scale? That guy said, yeah, I got a scale. He said, you got a big bass? I said, yeah, big one. He goes, how big? 5 or 6 pounds? And when I opened up that live well, I can't say what that guy said, but it was like, holy blankety blank blank. And he weighed that fish. Now, on his scale, it weighed 8.00.
Wow.
I don't know how big it weighed, but that was pretty close. And I was going to take it in, but then I felt guilty, and I took it back to that boulder and let her go. But come to find out that would not have been the record. It was more than that. But that's the biggest one I've ever caught.
Wow,
but,
that's incredible.
It was a giant, man. It didn't even look real. I think the biggest I've caught up here, I've caught several sixes, you know, over six. 6'8", I think, is the biggest one I caught.
I'd say you're due for a 7.
What's that?
I'd say you're due for a 7.
Oh, yeah, I would love to catch a 7-pounder. I
had
some friends that just called me from Longview, where I live, and they called me about a month ago wanting to go smallmouth fishing, and they were going to choose, never caught smallmouth in their life. They were going to choose between Champlain, Mille Lacs, and St. Lawrence, and so they end up going to Mille Lacs.
Okay.
And they've been sending me pictures for the last 3 days. They're catching them, too, but no big ones. They had a 5-something, but a bunch of fours and stuff, so they're having a ball. They're catching 100 a day.
That sounds pretty fun.
Yep.
That sounds good.
And they said, those smallmouth pull real hard. I said, yes, they do.
No doubt. Well, Jim, I tell you what, we've been on the phone for about an hour right now, and I love talking to you, but I got some things I need to get accomplished today. But
I understand, man, and I really appreciate you asking me to do the podcast because, you know, me and you, we never really get to talk outside a tournament where there's always something pressing, you know, for both of us.
Oh, yeah. It's always
so
go,
we
go,
get
go.
To talk at length. And, yeah. Well, I appreciate it, Jody. And I certainly enjoyed it. And hope someone listens to this and gets a couple of tips that helps them catch a fish or two.
Well, I like it. And, Jim, it's always a pleasure talking with you. And I'll see you Well, man, I'll see you next week up here in New York, and it'll be smallmouth time.
You got it, man. Thanks, Jody.